Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll get back to callers. I left a lot of you on, and there were some really good comps that I wanted to get to. So we'll come back to this at some point during the show. But joining me right now from Pro Football Focus is Nick Akridge at PFF underscore Nick Akridge on X on Twitter. Nick is a senior data analyst for PFF. More importantly, he is a huge Washington fan. And whether he has the responsibility of grading them for PFF on a week-in, week-out basis or not, he ends up watching that game very closely, both live and after the fact. So let me just start with, who did you end up grading this past week? What game?
I had the Cowboys and Jets early 1 o'clock game. I don't usually grade 4 o'clock games. So whenever the Commanders are playing 4 o'clock or later, I'm typically not going to be grading that game. But like you said, I am going back and rewatching it pretty thoroughly.
By the way, real quickly on that Jet Cowboy game, the Jets, like I watched the beginning of that game and basically Breece Hall and anybody else was averaging like 8 yards a carry. And then they dropped Justin Fields back for some unknown reason. Let me just tell you why I was watching it. I had the Jets in the game, which was the wrong side. But the thing that I came away from that game thinking, and I forget what you thought of Justin Fields. I actually thought coming out, he had a chance. I kind of liked Justin Fields for today's NFL. He just doesn't see it, does he, as a passer?
No, he's just kind of constantly a tick slow. I was a fan of his coming out as well. I thought that he would be a really good player in the NFL. It's just not clicking. And we've kind of, you know, really seen enough at this point to know that it's just really not going to happen for him. It's unfortunate, but I mean, I think he's a tremendous athlete and he's going to add value wherever he goes as a solid backup and, a real running threat. But in terms of starting quarterback, if you're kind of hitching your wagon to Fields, it's not going to go too well.
Do you think, by the way, Nick, that we really do know for sure, given what, you know, Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold putting on an epic performance the other day? I mean, 3-4 years ago, these guys were basically done in everybody's mind. We've gone through that with so many other quarterbacks. You know, it's a position where it's hard, based on what we see, to give up on guys because it's a mental maturity, you know, learn how to play the position, you know, situation. So is there something where you can kind of rule out somebody at 25, 26, 27 years old?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I would have certainly ruled out some of the guys you just mentioned there. And, it does kind of always take that one kind of coach for some of these guys to really have it click. But, you know, for some of these guys, it's a bit different than what I'm seeing with Fields. Fields, like I kind of mentioned, is just everything's a little bit slow right now for him to kind of process stuff. These other guys, that really wasn't their problem.
It was the problem with Sam Darnold. It was the problem with Darnold, didn't you think?
A little bit. But his problem also was just too many erratic plays as well. Fields doesn't really have that erratic play style. He's just everything is super, super conservative, and then it just doesn't lead to any sort of passing offense. So that's kind of my one little sticking point there with Fields. You can never rule anybody out with the way Darnold's come back. Geno Smith, other than this year, that's kind of a completely different.
I mean, are we going to be saying this about Daniel Jones at the end of this year?
Yeah, he's another one that you can talk about. I mean, for Daniel Jones, though, I kind of always thought that he was people are a little
that
too
he didn't
harsh
stink.
On him with, yeah, I didn't think he was great, but I didn't think he was right. You know, a bottom five quarterback in the NFL. I thought he was always kind of in that mid to below average range, and now you get him on a team with a really great rushing attack, some weapons around him, and he's looking great.
Is there a guy out there that we've kind of thrown in the towel on that you think we shouldn't have? I mean, by the way, Mac Jones, we haven't even mentioned Mac Jones. And I'm thinking of like a guy like a Trey Lance, you know, maybe an even younger player, although he is in the Fields draft. Is there a guy that you're like, don't throw in the towel on him quite yet?
Yeah, I think for me, it's Anthony Richardson. I can't quit him. I just can't do it. Coming out of the draft, I was a huge fan of him, and
me
I think
too.
For him, he is just so inexperienced in the amount of football that he has played,
right.
And throwing him in right away and just kind of expecting him to figure it out was just never really going to work. I don't think the Colts did a great job of setting him up for success. I think there's still a chance for him because he does all of the stuff, the quarterbacking stuff, really well. Like, he is a, in my opinion, I thought he was a great processor coming out of college for someone who only played, like, one season in college. He does all of the little things really well in terms of managing pockets and stuff like that. And obviously the arm talent is kind of speaks for itself. But yeah, I think he's kind of the one guy that I can't quit right now.
I agree with that. God, I agree with that. Like, there's just something. There was a game that they played against Utah early in the year, 2 years ago. And I'm like, that guy may be raw and he may be a long way off, but he has some of the most amazing physical gifts I've ever seen. You know, in talking about Daniel Jones too, when you talk about like the coaching, like having a guy like David Cutcliffe in college, right? I mean, and now getting a Shane Steichen. I mean, I think Brian Daboll did a decent job with him in that 1 year, and then maybe he just lost confidence. But God, the right coach. Look at, you know, you mentioned it. I mean, Darnold ends up with Kyle and then Kevin O'Connell. All right, Baker ends up with just a very short stint with Sean McVay, and it's like it turned their careers around.
Yeah, it just takes that one guy to kind of figure out what they do well, and we've seen it with these same coaches over and over again. They kind of know how to develop quarterbacks, and it just kind of works with these guys over and over again, and that's really kind of what some of these guys need is that kind of right person to understand what he does well and just kind of put him in that best situation.
Talking with Nick Ackridge from Pro Football Focus. By the way, just sticking with the quarterback and the league conversation right now, Cowboy fans want all of us to believe that Dak Prescott is the legitimate MVP front runner right now. Do you agree with that?
I don't know if I'd put him as MVP frontrunner. I do think that he was playing and is playing fantastic football. I think he's playing some of the best quarterback play in the NFL. I just think that MVP-wise, you have to have a very good team, and I just don't think that their team is good enough. Now, that kind of just comes down to the conversation of what you really think MVP is. For me, I just kind of like to put it as the best quarterback on the best team. You can argue that he is the most valuable, and he is, you know, keeping them afloat with how well he's playing. But I think Dak has always been a fantastic quarterback. As much as it pains me to say that, I think he's consistently one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and I think he's up there again this year.
Who would you rather have right now quarterbacking Tampa, Dak Prescott or Baker Mayfield?
Oh, that is tough. I just wrote an article on Baker Mayfield's game this past Sunday, and he was fantastic. It was one of the best performances in a second half I've ever seen. He wasn't missing. I think right now I would lean Baker, but I think they're kind of both in that same sort of tier of just not with kind of those top four guys, but kind of in that next group below where you can kind of argue they're, you know, 6 to 12 or 6 to 10 sort of range. But I think I would lean Baker.
Sticking with the league and quarterbacks, because I'm just thinking about a lot of things from this past weekend. You know, we go back to the 24 draft, and there is a lot of promise now for several of them, including, you know, Caleb's last two games. But what do you think of Bo Nix so far? Is that just a Sean Payton creation, or could he be this elsewhere?
I think with Bo Nix, and something I kind of talked about with him pre-draft, is I think what he is right now as a quarterback is what he's going to be. I think with these type of players that play a lot of college football, there's not much more room for growth. I think he is kind of just an adequate starting quarterback. I don't think he's terrible. I don't think he's great. And I just think he's kind of adequate, and he's in an offense that it just kind of fits perfectly for him and what Sean Payton wants to do. So that's kind of where I think Bo Nix is. He's a good enough starting quarterback to win you games, but he's not going to be the type of quarterback that can elevate your team to that next level and kind of honestly really compete for Super Bowls.
Do you think Carson Wentz has played well enough in the two games over in Europe for Minnesota to keep J.J. McCarthy on the bench when he's healthy?
No, I don't think so. It's the typical Carson Wentz experience. We obviously have all gone through it where he shows flashes of incredible play, but then there's just some absolutely just mind-numbing stuff with what he does in the pocket and how he always believes that he can break every single tackle and make every single throw. That seemingly has not really changed in his mind. So I think they still have to go with J.J. because I don't think you're winning anything with Carson, so you have to see what you have with J.J. McCarthy. Even if Carson plays an incredible game next week, I still think that you have to go back to McCarthy because, like I said, I just don't see them really competing with Carson Wentz as a quarterback.
Yeah, he makes some throws every once in a while, and you're like, wow, that's the guy that, until he broke his leg in the Coliseum, was a legitimate MVP, you know, front runner with the Eagles. And then he takes sacks, and he puts balls up for grabs, and you're like, he can't do it. When we look back, right now, just this is a, you know, a year and five games in to the second year, but let's move ahead to 10 years from now. How will the quarterbacks flush out in terms of their careers, the six that were taken in the first round, 2024?
I think all the first three, Jaden, Caleb, and Drake, I think those three are going to be your top echelon of quarterbacks. I still do believe with Caleb, I think that last year was so, so bad in terms of what was around him that you kind of almost have to write it off. This year, I think he's been playing some really good football. Even when they were going 0-2, I thought he was really good. Drake May is finally kind of, you know, making a name for himself. But I thought even prior to Sunday night, he was playing some really, really good football. And we obviously know that Jaden has already kind of proven himself as one of those best quarterbacks. So I think those three are kind of up there. I think Penix, for me, it's too early to kind of say what he's going to be. I kind of see him in that same sort of Bo Nix territory where I think they're going to be adequate starting quarterbacks, but I don't know if they're going to really take that next step. And then for JJ, I mean, that one is just at this point, it's just a complete projection. I think coming out, I was kind of high on him. I didn't have him close to the top three guys, but I had him fourth right behind him. But he's played just so little football right now that it's tough for me to say that he's going to be up there. But I think if you're looking for best case scenario for J.J. McCarthy, I think you're looking at a Jared Goff type player where you put him in a system that is, you know, just a great offensive play caller, great offensive system, and he's always going to get the ball to where it needs to be. That's kind of, I think, what the ceiling is for J.J. McCarthy. And so I would have the top three guys that were taken. I think they're going to all be elite quarterbacks. I kind of said that coming out of the draft, and I think that's the same. And those next three are going to be your kind of adequate starters, which for one draft class is kind of incredible.
Are you buying into from that draft, by the way, but you got to go to the fifth round. Are you buying into Spencer Rattler as a potential, you know, starter in this league?
Yeah, I am. I think coming out, Rattler was kind of a guy that I was close to putting kind of close to Bo Nix and Penix in my rankings just because he's not a similar sort of quarterback, but in terms of the boom bust potential, it was kind of massive for him because I think his talent is really kind of up there with all of them, really. And it was just for him kind of just limiting some of the erratic plays. And he's been playing some pretty solid football for the Saints. So I wouldn't be too surprised if he turns into an adequate starter. Again, I don't think he's ever going to reach that top tier, but I think he can really carve out a decent career for himself in New Orleans.
Yeah, you know, watching him, he really is talented. The issue with him coming out was all of the intangible stuff. I mean,
yeah,
the stories about him at Elite 11 and various other places. I mean, people didn't want to touch this dude, but he can sling it, and he can move around and make things happen. I've been impressed with him. All right, let's talk about our team. Big picture, through five games, 3-2, You know, they've beaten three teams that have been banged up. Two of those three really weren't good teams and aren't good teams. They lost two others, one without, two without their starting, one without their starting quarterback in Atlanta. What do you make of this team right now? Like, how do you project the season going based on the first five?
I think it's going to kind of go similar to the first five. I think it's going to be a lot of ups and a lot of downs, and they're going to kind of hover around that 500 the rest of the year. I just think that this defense right now is just, it's just so unreliable week to week that really the kind of best way to predict how they're going to perform is whether or not the other team's offensive line is good or bad.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it's been every single week, that if they play a bad offensive line, the defensive line is going to be great and it'll mask all the problems in the secondary. And if they can't get pressure, the secondary is going to get exposed. And we've kind of seen that. I don't know if that's going to get fixed throughout the course of the season. And you're just going to have to really hope in those games where they can't get pressure that the offense just scores more than them. And they almost did that with the Falcons. I thought Mariota played great in that game, but when your defense is giving up a score on almost every single possession, it's pretty tough. So that's kind of where I see this team heading. It's where there's going to be a lot of shootouts, and you just got to hope that Jaden Daniels is playing his best game.
So I kind of see it the same way, and I look back at last year and say, well, we had the same issues. You know, the offense essentially had to carry the team and win games despite a defense that wasn't very good. But this year, and I'm curious if you agree with this, and if not, you know, let me know what you think. And that is, the difference defensively this year is actually they're not terrible against the run. They can't cover, and they need pass rush to mask that. A, do you agree with that? B, which is worse defensively, to be terrible against the run and okay in pass coverage, or vice versa?
That's a good question. I do agree that their run defense has been much, much better. I think it's last year their run defense was just kind of pray that Bobby Wagner can make a play. This year it's been a lot better up front. I think that Kinlaw, who I was kind of down on that signing, I think he's been fantastic in the run game. Daron Payne's kind of been pretty good there. For them, it's just in the run game and really everything. It's just finishing the play. It's just making the tackles. I think they've constantly put themselves in good positions to make a play. They're just missing a lot of tackles right now. But as for what would it rather, I think being bad in the run game, I would rather take that than being this bad in coverage, because the explosive plays are just, they're just backbreaking right now. And even when you get a team in second and long, third and long, there's always the potential for the first down on that play. And that's kind of what's killing this defense right now. So I would take a bad run defense over a bad coverage team.
How did Jaden play Sunday per PFF?
Yeah, he was their highest graded player, offense and defense, 85.9 overall grade. I was pretty that's kind of what I was expecting for his grade. I think it was a slow start, as we all saw. And that kind of won that third and 16 throw that he hit just kind of turned everything around for him, and I thought he was fantastic after that. There's still some kind of accuracy concerns with me. He was missing a lot of throws, and not missing them like inaccuracy, but he was just kind of slightly off, a little behind, a little overthrown, a little in front. He was actually, we chart ball placement for every quarterback, and he was the lowest accuracy or lowest rated accurate quarterback this week with his ball placement. So that's kind of the one thing that has been scaring me recently. But I thought the rest of his game was fantastic. The deep ball was great, and I thought he was just doing a great job.
How lucky are they that they've had Deebo Samuel this year?
Yeah, he's kind of been everything that they've asked for. I think he's been fantastic in the screen game as a runner, even in the pass game. I thought he's been great. He's kind of the perfect piece for this Cliff Kingsbury offense. You saw that they kind of wanted to do some of this stuff last year with Austin Ekeler, and it just wasn't really the same. But having someone like Deebo Samuel in the backfield, and that can also line up out wide, and you have to legitimately respect what he's going to do. I think he's just a perfect fit for this offense.
All right. I'm going to ask you what I asked callers for basically the first hour of the show. Do you have a comp for Bill Kroski Merritt? Historical, current, doesn't matter. Who comes to mind when you watch him run?
Yeah, I was thinking about this a lot. I'm typically pretty bad with comps, but someone that I can't stop thinking of is Alvin Kamara, with just the way he runs. I think Kamara, what makes him and made him so great is his contact balance and his agility, and his just, he never goes down, and that's kind of what speaks to his contact balance. That first guy is never going to make him go to the ground, and that's kind of what I've been seeing with Bill so far, is the way he's able to cut the contact balance and never going down in that first tackle. That's kind of where I would put him as a runner. I don't think he's as good as a receiver. And comping him to Kamara might be a little too much too early, but that's kind of the play style that I see.
It's interesting. You've joined, I don't know, at least, based on social media response and calls, at least a dozen to two dozen people who have said Alvin Kamara. For me, I'm like, I don't see that. And maybe what's throwing me off is Alvin Kamara's, caught 80 plus balls a year. He's been more of a Warwick Dunn, Marshall Faulk kind of back than a pure runner. And I see Bill as more of a pure lead running back. Now that's different than running style. And I acknowledge that. I don't know, Kamara, you're right. The shiftiness, the balance, it's a good word, along with great vision and cutting ability. I also see him more as a darter. You know, he darts in and out, where Bill is a little bit more upright and, great vision, great feel. You've joined a lot of people. I don't see that comp, but you have clearly joined many people that see it that way. What else was I going to ask you? Defensively, who's been – give me the top three defensive players through five games.
Through five games. Give me a second here. I got to pull that up.
Because Armstrong, to me, just through five games, has been their best all-around defensive player. Has he graded out that way?
Yeah, right now we've got Bobby Wagner first. Bobby Wagner in the run game, I think he's still the highest rated linebacker in the run game. The coverage has been a massive problem, which is kind of right. Dragging that grade down. Dorrance Armstrong is second, 77.9 overall. Jerome Payne, third. Jacob Martin, fourth. Javon Kinlaw, fifth. Eddie Goldman, sixth. So those are kind of the guys that, again, it's that the defensive line really that has been playing the best football for them. And then you can kind of expect that the bottom five are pretty much all secondary players right now.
How did Jordan McGee grade out in just, it was 12 snaps, I think?
Yeah, 59.6 is what we had.
So that's average.
The problem with him was missed tackles, yeah. It's going to be tough to kind of get anything over 60 when you're playing 12 snaps. So biggest thing for him was a couple missed tackles that's going to bring that grade down. But I think the rest was pretty solid. I liked what I saw in the very, very limited snaps that he played.
Thanks for doing this. As always, hope you're well. We'll do it again soon.
Yep, appreciate it. Have a good one.
Nick Akridge, everybody, from Pro Football Focus, senior data analyst and a huge Skins fan, at PFF _ Nick Akridge. Some of that quarterback conversation is really interesting, isn't it? I mean, seriously, like, what do we really know about these young guys at this point? I mean, you just have way too many that you count out in year three, year four, year five, and here they are in year seven, year eight, and they are coming into their own, and nothing reflects that more than the unbelievable performance put on by Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold in a 38-35, probably best football game of the year in the NFL on Sunday. Two guys that basically were done. I mean, done. They played on the same team briefly in Carolina back in 2022, where everybody was like, yeah, they have been sent off to the hinterlands. There is no chance. Their careers are over. And remember, for Baker Mayfield, it was a Thursday night game in 2022 where the Rams were down a bunch of quarterbacks. They were playing the Raiders. And McVay pulled Baker Mayfield basically out of unemployment for the most part at that point and said, here are the plays I need you to play in this game. And he did, and he played well, and that led to an opportunity in Tampa, and the rest is history. Sam Darnold, kind of same thing, in that Carolina situation for a year after, it didn't work out with the Jets. And then he signs in San Francisco. He backs up Brock Purdy in 2023, but he learns under Kyle Shanahan. And then Kyle says, actually, Kevin O'Connell, we're keeping Brock, but Sam Darnold can play. And he has that year that he had last year, 35 touchdowns, whatever it was, 4,500 yards. And they don't even keep him. They send him, let him hit free agency because they drafted J.J. McCarthy. And he's off to an incredible start in Seattle. Speaking of that game and others, we really didn't have a chance to kind of go around the entire league and talk about some of the games on the show yesterday. We'll go back to Sunday. We'll go back to last night. I mean, just some great games around the league, around the NFL when we return. Also want to let you know that IHOP has a very interesting opportunity. They're introducing the IHOP value menu where all your breakfast favorites are just $6 each every day. Where else can you get a big, filling, sit-down breakfast for only $6? Well, go to your happy plates with this $6 IHOP value menu available every day at IHOP. $7 in some locations.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It was not the wrong decision, just a really good design by the Dallas defense.
Prescott loads up. Pickens, hand fighting into the end zone. Touchdown!
43-yard pass in that game to Pickens. Also that one for a touchdown. Dallas rolled the Jets 37-22. The game was really never in doubt. They led 30-3 in this game, ended up 37-22, and Cowboy fans are ecstatic with Dak Prescott's season so far. Dak, 10 touchdowns, 3 picks, 1,356 yards, and he's completing passes at a 71.3% rate. The wins for the Cowboys are over the Giants and the Jets. I'll just, you know, reiterate that. Giants in overtime, 40-37, and the Jets, 37-22. They did tie Green Bay, and Dak was phenomenal in the game. So, you know, we're going to go around the NFL and touch on some of the games that we didn't touch on yesterday, and we're going to finish with the Tennessee-Arizona game, because there was a lot in that game that was almost made it truly one of the wildest, craziest, kookiest games we've seen in a long time, and there's a big question to be asked at the end of that game and something that happened yesterday. But we want to touch on some of the games that we didn't talk about, and I'm wondering if there's any reason to take Dallas seriously. I mean, they're good on offense. They're good on offense. I mean, they did this with four offensive linemen, like the Charger situation, missing. And they destroyed the Jets. Not only did Dak Prescott throw for four touchdowns, no picks, they rushed for 180 yards in the game. A buck 80. Javonte Williams is having himself a season. Through five games now, 447 yards, 5.7 yards per carry. No CeeDee Lamb, no problem. Ryan Flournoy, have you heard of him? Southeast Missouri, sixth round pick in 2024. On Sunday against the Jets, Ryan Flournoy, number 19. I thought it was Miles Austin that had come back. Six catches, 114 yards. The tight end, Ferguson's become a weapon with Dak. Pickens is coming into his own. Kevontae Turpin obviously is a threat, you know, all over the place. By the way, Brandon Aubrey missed a point after the other day. He missed an extra point. It didn't seem possible. They worked Jaden Blue, the rookie out of Texas, into the lineup for the first time. I'm wondering, what are the Cowboys? You know, these NFL seasons early on, things change. They don't have a lot of talent defensively, that's for sure. And it does seem like they can't get off the field enough to be a legitimate threat. But in today's NFL, could they win nine games and be a threat to be a wild card team with, you know, the top offense in the NFL, if you want to view it that way? I don't think I view it as the top offense in the NFL. I think statistically right now, I think they are at the top, you know, in things like yards per game. They're averaging 406 yards per game. That's the number one average yards per game offense in the NFL. In terms of DVOA, Dallas is fifth in offense per DVOA. Buffalo, the Rams, Indy, and Detroit are all better DVOA metric offenses. I think Detroit's offense might be the best in the league. I think the Rams are up there. I think Indy might be up there, as crazy as that sounds. And we're probably forgetting a team or two. I think Washington's going to move up the ranks. They are 11th currently per DVOA in overall offense. Last year, I think they finished fifth or sixth in the league offensively. So, yeah, Dallas is interesting because they've gotten themselves to 2-2-1. Certainly could have won the Green Bay game. You know, they could have won the Philadelphia game in the opener. They have the Panthers this week. If you're a Dallas fan, this is a tricky game and a dangerous game, which I thought the Jets game was too. By the way, did you know, Max, the Jets went from plus 2.5, plus 3 on Friday to favored by
the
a
line.
Point and a half at kickoff.
It was a lot of sharp movement, man. It was wild.
I was on the Jets. That probably helped move the line. I'm kidding, of course.
I think you're right.
The Jets line had so much sharp money on them because they just thought the Jets could run the football, control the clock, and win the game against Dallas's defense. They're going to say the same thing about Carolina. The Cowboys are only a 3.5-point favorite over the Panthers right now. Panthers have won two of their last three, so they've played better. Now they're two wins, Falcons and Dolphins. I think the Falcons win's an impressive win. Dangerous game, but I'm going to tell you this, man, for the Cowboys. If they can beat Carolina to get to 3-2-1, they're going to have a home game the following week against us, against Washington. 4:25 Fox. It'll be the Burkhart Brady game. I'm certainly assuming that it will be. What else is on that day? Let's see. Washington at Dallas. It's 4:25 on Fox. Green Bay at Arizona is the other game. So, yes, it's going to be the Burkhart. We're going to get Burkhart and Brady a bunch because I know Detroit comes to town for a 4:25 game as well. And that becomes, you know, Washington win or lose, but if they win and they're 4-2 and they're playing 3-2-1 Dallas with the Cowboys having won two straight and the other game being a tie against the Packers, it's going to feel like a big spot early in the season. Is that an exaggeration? For the Cowboys, Dallas, if they can beat Carolina and then get Washington at home and win that game, they'd be 4-2-1. Let me just tell you, they have the Cardinals on the schedule. They've got the Raiders on the schedule. They've got the Giants still, you know, one more time. They also have the Chiefs, Eagles, Washington twice, the Lions. It's not easy. The Broncos they have to face. Are the Cowboys worth paying attention to in terms of being a team that could be a sneaky contender for a wild card spot or even the division? I don't think so.
They got a lot to they got a lot to work out on defense. It's that secondary
that's the
looks,
issue.
That secondary looks worse than ours. That's saying something. Yeah, absolutely. I think that, but I do think that our front seven is a little bit better. Just with, I mean, you have a player coach in Bobby Wagner on the field, and that's always going to put you kind of a step above, at least for me.
I'll tell you what. Right now, yeah, I can call this a week from Sunday, Washington at Dallas. The total in that game is going to be in the low to mid 50s. It'll be one of the highest over under numbers of the season. All right, Dallas looking good offensively as a team that's not even healthy offensively. They've now been very good offensively in two straight games without offensive linemen, starting offensive linemen, and CeeDee Lamb missing. Let's go to Baltimore for the Ravens' disaster Sunday.
There's some of that run identity. And it is a run to Nick Chubb. Chubb could go all the way and does. Touchdown, Texans.
Remember when we were talking all offseason and I'm like, Chubb, Dobbins, why not? Well, I mean, I wasn't counting on Kroski Merritt to be what he's become, but both Dobbins and Chubb, Dobbins is really having a season in Denver, and Nick Chubb certainly had moments for the Houston Texans. In that game, by the way, Chubb, that was a 27-yard touchdown run, 11 carries, 61 yards. I mean, the Ravens, good God, this is bad. They are 1-4 with the Rams coming to town. And they have given up 41, 38, 37, and 44. The Ravens, through five games, have allowed 177 points. That's insane. They are giving up basically 35 plus a game. They've got major injury issues. I mean, but you know, at some point, don't you just say, this is the NFL, man. It's next man up. I know that's cliche, but look at the Cowboys, what they've been able to do. Look at our team with injuries. And at some point, maybe you look at it and say, something's going on there. Now, Lamar getting back this week would be huge. They have a bye week after this Rams game. And then they've got the Bears, Dolphins, Vikings, Browns, Jets, Bengals. I mean, they've got a good stretch of games that with Lamar healthy. If I'm Baltimore and it's a hamstring injury, I'm sitting Lamar and just taking the L against the Rams, doing my best. And then coming back after the break is a 1-5 team. I mentioned this yesterday, but right now in the AFC North, the Steelers and the Ravens are co-favorites to win the division. Pittsburgh's 3-1, Baltimore's 1-4, probably heading to 1-5. And the reason being is Baltimore out of that bye has a very easy schedule, and they still have the Steelers twice. So there's and Cincinnati and Cleveland, you can basically count them completely out. They're not going to contend in that division unless Burrow comes back much sooner than expected. But man, I can't remember the last time we have said about the Ravens, they're a bad football team right now. When's the last time? Been years. The Rams are 8-point favorites at M&T Bank on Sunday. 8-point favorites. By the way, the last time the Rams and Ravens played at M&T Bank, it was a few years ago. It was a crazy, crazy game. And the Rams are coming off the mini bye, having played Thursday night in that devastating loss to the 49ers. Yeah, we'll see. Cooper Rush, by the way, the quarterback. And I would not count the Texans out of anything. I think we talked about this last week in our NFL buy and sell, and I said the Texans are too good on defense, way too good on defense to count out. And this win, you know, it's not who you play, it's when you play them, and they got the Ravens on the road at the right time. I think the Texans are still a good football team. I mean, Indy's jumped out to that lead in the AFC South with Jacksonville. You know, the two of them are 4-1. Houston's sitting there at 2-3. But they haven't played They haven't played Indy yet. They still have two with the Colts left, and they still have another game against Jacksonville at home. I would not count the Texans out in that division. We'll finish up with some more NFL talk when we come back. I want to end with what happened in Arizona, including the play in which the running back dropped the ball and lost a touchdown that would have put the game away, the coach's reaction on the sideline to it, and then the coach's apology. A lot there to talk about. All of our NFL talk presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday, all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today.
All right. It is Tuesday, October 7th. It is, like I said, Tuesday. We start off with a Monday Night Football recap. An absolutely electric Monday Night Football game last night between the Chiefs and Jaguars, who won on a broken play where Trevor Lawrence got tripped by his own offensive lineman and scrambled in for the touchdown. The Jags win 31-28. To baseball, the Dodgers, they hold off the Phillies as they attempt a late-game comeback, scoring three runs in the eighth and ninth inning. But Roky Sasaki comes in for the final at-bat and escapes with the win. Dodgers now lead the series 2-0. The Brewers, they secure the win over the Chicago Cubs by a score of 7-3. The Cubs off to a hot start with a three-run bomb from Seiya Suzuki, but the Brewers answer right back with a three-run home run of their own from Andrew Vaughn. And from there on out, it was all Brewers with two more bombs from Wilson Contreras and Jackson Chourio, and the Brewers take a commanding 2-0 lead in the five-game series. More postseason baseball on tap tonight. On the AL side, the Mariners take on the Tigers in a day-game matchup at 4 p.m. Logan Gilbert taking the mound for the Mariners versus Detroit's Jack Flaherty in his series tied at one game apiece. Then we've got the Blue Jays going up against the New York Yankees. Shane Bieber on the mound for Toronto versus the Yankees' Carlos Rodon. First pitch for that one will be around 8 p.m. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type at the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Den's office throughout all football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk. Crazy weather we're having. No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
A little bit more from the NFL game on NFL card on Sunday. How about this one between the Rams and the Colts?
For Shane Steichen and this Colt team. And there he goes, Jonathan Taylor, his third touchdown today.
How about the season Jonathan Taylor is having? On the day, three more rushing touchdowns for him. He's got six on the season. He's rushed for 480 yards, and he's actually being benched at the end of these games for other running backs because they've hammered people this year. 33-8 the opener over the Dolphins, 41-20 over the Titans, and 40-6 over the Raiders. A beatdown which really does kind of reflect what the Raiders are. Washington hammered them in the same way. You know, right now, the Indianapolis Colts, In terms of just an offensive juggernaut, they are averaging 32.6 points per game, second in the league to the Detroit Lions, who are averaging 34.8 points per game. The Colts are really rolling right now. Now, you can look at it and say Dolphins, Titans, Raiders among the wins. They did beat Denver, and they probably shouldn't have beaten Denver. They had a missed field goal at the end. Denver had a penalty on the missed field goal. They got another opportunity, and they made the kick to go to win that game 29-28. That could be, I mean, this is typical of the NFL, right? Through week five, that week two Indy Denver game that nobody cared about and thought, you know, two bad teams playing against each other could ultimately decide something from a playoff standpoint when we get to January. But the Colts are rolling, and Daniel Jones is playing at a high level. The rookie Tyler Warren at tight end playing at a very high level. This is a good football team and a talented football team that just needed some stability at quarterback, and it looks like Daniel Jones has given that to them. Let's go to Cincinnati for the Lions and the Bengals.
But it was a tough start, but that last drive, oh boy.
And a safety sack by Derek Barnes, and that'll end the hope.
Yeah, that'll end the hope of a backdoor cover, that's for sure, because the Bengals scored three touchdowns in the fourth quarter when the game was basically over at 28-3. The Bengals are a mess, man. You talk about a valuable player in this league. Joe Burrow is a valuable player in this league. But it's fun to watch the Lions these days. They're good on both sides of the ball. They have so many weapons. And they just have a quarterback that just throws and completes almost every single ball if you give him time in that scheme. And Johnny Morton, as the replacement OC for Ben Johnson, is doing a great job. And they are healthy defensively and good. I think right now, if I were to pick the NFC champion, it would be Detroit. I think they're the most complete team in the NFC, with a level of explosiveness offensively that I think you have to have, that they had last year, that they appear to have this year. They play on Sunday night at Arrowhead against the Chiefs. Those would be the 2-3 Chiefs after last night's game. All right, I want to finish up with this. Tennessee and Arizona on Sunday. Probably the least attractive game on the board, but how about this play in the fourth quarter?
Clock running inside of 5 minutes. Ward goes through his progressions. Everyone covered, slings it back. It's deflected and picked. Taylor Demerson, and then the football came out. Who recovers? Tennessee for the touchdown in a crazy sequence.
So what happened is the ball was tipped and picked off, Cam Ward's pass was. And then the defender who intercepted the pass, Taylor Demerson, got up, and as he started to run, fumbled the football. Then it got kicked around, and Tyler Lockett landed on it in the end zone for a Tennessee touchdown. Now, okay, all's fine. The lead was 21-6. Now it's 21-12. Now it's 21-19 after that play. They were down 21-12. They had to kick the extra point after Joey Sly had missed the extra point before. But a play earlier in the game at 21-3 Arizona early in the fourth quarter, running back Amari DiMarcado broke a long, what was going to turn into a 71-yard touchdown and a 28-3 Cardinals lead. Game over. And he did the thing that players continue to do. The kid Mitchell did it last week in Indianapolis. It's beyond me. I know it's beyond many of you why players continue to not carry the ball over the plane of the goal line. Not just over breaking the plane of the goal line with possession of the ball, but at this point, given all of these plays, it really started with DeSean Jackson years ago when he did it for the first time. And we see this, it goes viral. We see it on every highlight show. There's no way that these guys don't know about this at this point. It's a decade-long thing, at least a decade-long thing. It happens in every level of football. Are these players just stupid? I don't think they're stupid. Is there some sort of lack of spatial awareness, like where they are on the field? The coaching point is really simple. Do not let go of the football until you see that you are in the back of the end zone. And then I want you to turn and I want you to bring the football to the referee. And the referee that's got his arms up in the air signaling touchdown, and then hand him the football. That's the way we're going to do it from now on to avoid this. It has truly become an embarrassing thing because the players that do it, because it's happened so much, they are called selfish, they are called stupid, they are called numb, they're called antagonistic in some cases because, oh, they're just trying to create a meme or they're trying to go viral. I don't think that's what's really happening. I think they just think it's cool to kind of drop the ball when they've barely reached the end zone. Except that it's not really cool because it costs people jobs, costs games, and costs people jobs. It can't happen. If you're a coach, you're definitely showing the play from last week, the Indianapolis player. It costs them the game against the Rams. It costs Arizona the game against the Titans. You got to see this, right? Aren't the coaches in their auditorium big team meetings early in the week putting that up on the screen and saying, hey guys, we've been watching this since DeSean Jackson first did it back in 2011 or 2010. If anybody does it, you know, unless you are invaluable to the team, we're going to cut you. You're going to lose your income from us. We're not paying you anymore. Whatever it is. Now, in this situation, Jonathan Gannon, the head coach for the Cardinals, was seen berating DeMarcado on the sideline with one of his offensive linemen having his arms around him, consoling him. He obviously knew what he had done, and it was crushing to him. And not only did Gannon berate him, but Gannon put his hands on him, you know, sort of elbowed him and then, you know, kind of slapped on his way back to, you know, the sideline from the bench area. And it led to Gannon apologizing for it. You're going to hear his apology when we come back. And from you, I want to hear whether or not you think the coach should have apologized for berating DeMarcado, putting his hands on him to a certain extent. It wasn't Bobby Knight style, okay? Was he required in that spot to apologize to the player publicly? 301-230-0980. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.